What is up, everybody? Welcome to yet another episode of Father Dynasty. My name is Chu, and I am here in the newly designed manhole, as you can see. And with me today, he is a fellow Brevin Jordan truther. And according to Tommy Pham, he is a better fantasy football commissioner than Mike Trout. I'm, of course, speaking of fellow Dynasty daddy, Tyler Daly. Tyler, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Appreciate the Brevin Jordan shout out. Loved getting your the content on Twitter today. That was fantastic. Maybe we can get into a little bit of the context there, but things are going good. Daughter's asleep. Sleep training is treated as well. So doing very well over here.
Good to hear it. Well, we can do a quick cheers here and then we'll get into it. So cheers.
Cheers.
Appreciation to my wife for a little Father's Day gift here. Oh yeah. That's smooth. That's smooth. Well, first of all, I know we want to dive into a new segment that it sounds good, and we can touch on a couple topics, one of which I know you're very tickled to talk about. So let's dig into Choose News.
Choose News.
So first, on the docket, I know there's plenty of fun things to talk about since that we've spoken out in our group messages, which is usually where a lot of the Dynasty news is spoken of. First thing to talk about, which a lot of it has unfolded certainly, is Deshaun Watson. And I won't get into I won't massage every single detail on this, but with what it's looking like now, when I was actually writing up these news bits here, this was before the supposed two additional people filing claims were going to come out. I think that would be 25 and 26, if I remember correctly. So what do you think the Browns look like this season and beyond, depending on his suspension, with Baker, all that kind of stuff?
Certainly throws an interesting wrench in the Baker Mayfield situation. I know that's an odd thing to lead off with, but you being a Carolina Panthers fan, me living in Charlotte, that rumor came back, or maybe not even a rumor at this point, but those discussions seem like they came back to the surface that the Panthers are still interested in Baker Mayfield. I know he feels disenfranchised, if you will, by the Browns' seeming lack of faith in him. So will he want to stay and play regardless of how this Deshaun Watson situation plays out? Seems unlikely. So we're looking at Jacoby Brissett, I believe, rolling into the season for Cleveland, which we've seen Jacoby Brissett play and play well at times. He's obviously not somebody that you're hoping to start 16 or 17 games a season, but serviceable, sure. And I, you know, long term, if this Deshaun Watson thing gets wrapped up, I think within a calendar year's time, whether it's a full year suspension or whatever that looks like, I mean, I think the Browns pretty much, I hope, knew what they were getting into, because this stuff was really very much still out there when they traded for him. And I think it's clear at this point why they won the trade sweepstakes. Deshaun Watson, Clemson guy from the South. Sounds like the Panthers and the Saints were both involved in the trade sweepstakes, but I can pretty much guarantee that they weren't willing to guarantee $230 million of money to him. And so the Browns were. So whatever happens next, they just have to deal with it as it comes, because from reading into it through all these cases, it doesn't sound like there's any out for them based on his legal proceedings. They've guaranteed this money, and I'm sure his agent, it sounds like his agent basically wrote the contract, because it's very Deshaun Watson friendly.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing what they had done with, I guess, the first year to not truly penalize him too much if he were to be suspended for possibly that full year, which it's like, smart considering.
It's only $1 million, right, I think?
Yeah, so I guess it's if he were to be suspended the whole year, it's some sort of like, I don't know if he would forfeit the whole salary or it's a percent based on a percentage of the salary, but obviously if his salary is discounted so much in the first year, but he has so much in bonus and signing bonus type money, then he still gets the money, and his suspension is really just hindering him in that he's not on the field playing with the team. Not that he's not getting money necessarily. But that is very interesting. Actually, with the news today, for what seems like the sixth or seventh time this offseason that apparently Carolina Panthers are very aggressively pursuing Baker. Because I guess they're not satisfied with the Darnold Corral duo right now. Shock to me. And I guess the thought is they would want, if it's going to be a new guy coming into the fold, Baker. I guess Garoppolo is probably off the table at this point. But they want him, I guess, in enough of OTAs or enough of camp to, for him to kind of really get a handle on the offense and the players and everything. I'd even heard, I think, something with McAdoo, the rockstar hire at OC, that there was, I think, Corral kind of getting a grasp on the offense itself, and that I think maybe was a bit of a steep learning curve that could have been hit because of the offense he was coming from at Ole Miss. I'm not too sure, but I wouldn't mind Baker coming to the Panthers, and I could maybe see him rather wanting to stay in Cleveland. I think he probably has enough, not pull, but maybe enough, like, you know, positive vibes coming from his fellow teammates to maybe want to, like, you know, they want to win and they have a team that is pretty stacked at this point, even devoid of Deshaun Watson. So maybe he would want to stay there and get himself a fat contract for next year, even if it's not in Cleveland. So I'm curious to see how that shakes out. But speaking of Watson and speaking of the cap, what are your thoughts on the salary cap gymnastics that more teams continue to take advantage of? I know you've always found it very interesting, certainly with what the Saints have done year over year as they end each season. I mean, over the cap by tens and twenties and thirties and forties of millions of dollars and continue to get back under it. I know recently the Rams are a team that they've been signing a lot of their stud guys just so they can make another couple of runs, hopefully at the Super Bowl. So what are your thoughts on the latest and greatest in cap gymnastics?
Yeah, that's actually what I wrote down, was just that the Rams situation reminded me of what we talked about with the Saints. And from what I've, you know, I'm far from a cap guru, but I guess what I can surmise is just they're doing something similar with the Saints in that they just load up signing bonus money because that can be prorated against the cap. And they're giving these guys fat lumps of cash on the front end of the deal, using that to subsidize. I mean, it's also not like they're not paying these guys. I think Aaron Donald, he's getting paid better than many quarterbacks in this league. I think he's somewhere in the neighborhood of in the low 30s per year. Kupp is in the high 20s. And it's hard to argue with the results. I don't think it's sustainable long term, but when you have that kind of talent, you just are coming off of a Super Bowl, who can blame them for trying to retain him? It just puts a lot of pressure on you from a draft perspective, because not only did they trade away a lot of their early picks to get some of these players that they have now, but you have to survive a lot of the season with your roster, or not just the season, but years of guys being successful on rookie deals, because you're not getting the premium top end talent in the first, second round that you're locking up. So you've got to hit on third, fourth and beyond picks, which is tough to do, but again, they're coming off the Super Bowl, so it's hard to argue with.
Yeah, and looking at some of the, I guess, cap implications that kind of came to a head for the Saints, I think maybe part of the reason why Sean Payton honestly probably wanted to exit stage left, because he will very much be back for a lucrative contract with a team that is ready to win now. But looking at the Saints currently, so this season, they have dead cap from Terron Armstead, who's now in the Dolphins, of $13 million. That was a restructure. And then Drew Brees, now retired, he has a dead cap hit of $11.5 million. So, I mean, just looking at that, it kind of seems like, and also with the Rams, previously when it was Goff, they actually still have a dead cap hit with Robert Woods of $12 million. So I think when they kind of take these big swings, and I mean, yeah, like you were saying with the guarantees, like, these owners are paying this money. It's not fake money. It is indeed being paid to these players. It's just being done in a way where it abides by the cap rules, even though if it kind of blows up in their face, and it could be guys that retire early, guys that get injured, guys that don't pan out, these dummy years they add to these deals. Basically, these cap hits just balloon up into dead cap hits that they can't withstand, unless the Rams do like what they did with Jared Goff, where they shipped him out. Honestly, they did the best thing where they shipped him out. I think it was with some picks as well, but we're able to get Matt Stafford, a guy who was able to help lead them right back to a Super Bowl, versus dumping Jared Goff's contract and just kind of scrambling from there. So that was good fortune by them, certainly. But yeah, like you were saying, they really have to hit on a lot of other picks to be able to afford to just deal out so much cash. So next up, and I think this is maybe the most exciting thing for you, Aaron Rodgers. So he's back in the dating pool, and he is, I know some things have been debunked here, but I'll just leave it at this, and I want you to kind of go from here. So Aaron Rodgers is essentially dating a witch named Blue, B-L-U, and I want you to go ahead and take it from here.
Well, first off, I want to make a quick inappropriate reference to one of our favorite shows, Arrested Development. This popped right into my head when Tobias tries to become part of the Blue Man Group. And Tobias always has a problem with phrasing, and he looks down and says, well, I guess I just blew myself. So, that was one of the first things that came to mind when, because I had not heard of this until you sent me the show notes. I had a little bit of free time this afternoon, which I spent overlooking reviewing your trades to me and instead researching this witch named Blue, which, as you said, apparently she came out on Instagram and has debunked the fact that she either once claimed to be a witch, which I'm not, no pun intended, I'm not understanding how it's not true, because I did a little bit of research on this girl. She hosts a podcast called Deja Blue, which is described as, quote, a clean reservoir of consciousness from which souls thirsty for purity, relief, and love can drink. And then I would like to direct you to her website, fluorescence.earth, which the headline on the website is, "Welcome to a Life of Absolute Magic." So then you can, from there,
I mean,
you can sign up for her foundational course, which is a 7-week online course with Blue and Reggie Riverbear, all about creating the foundations for a life of absolute magic. I mean,
wow, Reggie.
I'm not exactly sure where she gets off telling us she's not a witch, because if I click on as well, there's a tab called Sisterhood, which is apparently some sort of app that she's developing in conjunction with this site, which also says that if you, like us, have been dreaming of a place where you can meet with like-minded sisters, women who believe in a life filled with meaning, empowered creation, and deep meaningful relationships, all guided by an unwavering force of magical ailments, look no further. She then goes on, this will be my last quote. It's just, it's too good not to mention. Says some other things and then says, and have all caps fun through the simple permission to be our magical, radiant, juicy, powerful selves. So you tell me.
Magic is mentioned a number of times.
The tagline here is also, welcome to a life of absolute magic, said again at the bottom. So, Aaron Rodgers, he got into, I can't remember, was it Woodley?
Shailene Woodley.
Yes.
Yeah.
I went on a rant, I think, on this podcast last summer that, or either on or off this podcast to you guys, that I thought she was corrupting his career because he was going on all these nature hikes with her and not showing up for camp. And then she was the one, I think she was driving the bus on having him hold out and spend time away from the football field. I don't know what this woman's going to, then the whole vaccination thing and him, you know, saying he was involved with some pseudo medicines and stuff. Like, I don't know. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't smoke like a crap ton of pot, then like I'd be shocked, honestly, at this point.
Yeah, based on the hair, based on how everything went with the contract, and then Davante Adams leaves town, and then he's left with, I mean, just a shell of a receiving core, but seems pretty cool with it and says he's going to retire there. He seems at peace with some stuff right now. Like, this is far and away the worst receiving core he's had in his career, and he's just signed up to stick with it.
He said Alan Lazard is ready to take on wide receiver one. Prove us wrong, Aaron. Prove us wrong.
Yeah, this is going to be, I wouldn't say a tough one to watch, because, I mean, honestly, I guess devoid of Davante Adams, it's, and I guess somewhat of a trust in Randall Cobb, it kind of has been a revolving door. I know Jordy Nelson was a big piece. Jimmy Graham for a very, very, I mean, just a cup of coffee. But I guess devoid of that, no one will ever tell me, which is this is the next guy we'll talk about, that Marquez Valdez-Scantling is anything other than a guy that kind of catches a deep ball sometimes. But it's that level of like literal role player. I can do one thing, which technically run fast and catch, not at the same time necessarily. That's kind of the guys that he's had aside from Davante Adams. So he's made plenty of people look good, but I mean, this is unlike anything he's ever had to play with before. And I'm glad he's getting paid a bunch of money, and he's apparently, she cast a spell on his arm or something, because he's going to need it.
And if you want to sign up for the program, you can't, because the page is broken. I was going to see, you know, what kind of price tiers. Maybe I could get involved on the ground floor. I am going to sign up for the
newsletter, though,
so I can stay in tune with the latest going on at fluorescence.earth.
That's good. I mean, I certainly, whether it be weekly or every 2 weeks, certainly if you can come back and provide an update on Blue and what kind of sorcery that she's casting over the world, I guess. And speaking of, like I was talking about, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the word on the street is that he is apparently building, quote, a strong connection, close quote, with Mahomes. And looking at that, looking at some of the people that they've signed in the offseason, I know you got Juju Smith-Schuster. In the backfield, they've got Ronald Jones. They just recently re-signed Jerick McKinnon, with Darrell Williams leaving town to, I believe, Atlanta. And just to kind of give an overview of Marquez Valdez-Scantling's career at this point, since it being drafted by the Packers 2018 in the fifth round, he has a 50% catch rate, I rounded up, 538 yards per season on average. And just to point out, Kenny Golladay, who's been lambasted for how terrible he played last season, had 521. And he's averaged 3.25 touchdowns each season. So he also just played with Aaron Rodgers. And I know that the comparison with Mahomes when he came into the league was, oh man, he could be like an Aaron Rodgers. Look at this guy's arm talent. I mean, if MVS is supposed to be the guy that kind of takes a step up and helps to, I guess, fill the Tyreek-sized hole, I'm very concerned for that happening at all.
It'd probably be more exciting if I disagreed with you, but I don't at all. Like, I think what I was planning on saying is much like you just said, in that how are we supposed to buy into this being that much of a – how are we going to unlock another tier of MVS when he's going from one elite tier quarterback? And now I know Rodgers is – not in the prime of his career necessarily, like Pat Mahomes is, but how am I supposed to guarantee that he's going to go somewhere that, you know, coach speak connection or not, that things are going to be that much better? The pass catching core is just as crowded, if not more so. You've already listed the running back weapons. Obviously, the established rapport there with Travis Kelce is not going anywhere. And then all the new additions at wide receiver. I'm not saying he's going to be totally irrelevant, but this just falls for me into that category of over the summer bullshit that comes up. Like, you know, you hear about guys coming back from injury where they're in the best shape of their life. I sent you that picture earlier today, like pictures of dudes' quads going around. Like, I look, we all fall for it. I fell for the Mike Davis hype last offseason when I saw that picture of his gigantic quads working out in Atlanta. I said he was going to be a top 10 RB, and it was like one of the worst takes I've ever had in my entire life. So don't get me wrong. We're all subject to falling for it. But and the other one, like players eating meals together. Like, oh, yeah, they're really forming. They wake up and eat breakfast together. The yep. only connection I buy into is Russell Wilson and Carson Wentz, both very religious guys. Find out who they're going to Bible study with, and you'll see who they pass the most to. Carson Wentz to Michael Pittman last year, both very religious guys, went to Bible study together. Seattle, Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, both very religious guys. Word on the streets is Cortland Sutton, big religious guy, and he's already going to Bible study with Russell Wilson. So that's the kind of connection I buy into, not this, you know, beat writer fodder or whatever.
You may have very well just unlocked this is the information we need to know in terms of this is what where you actually trying to find that true faith in another player, as they likely share a faith in a higher power. So, I mean, that's, I don't think you get much better than that.
Yeah, you can't.
And speaking of faith in a higher power, rainy days in Seattle. And that is the nicest way to put it, as injuries mount. And as our beloved fellow teammate has mentioned, a quote of bereft of talent. Well, that was actually in reference to a team in our league. This kind of speaks to, if these injuries continue to stack up, you've got Chris Carson, who may never play again after a vertebrae fusion surgery in December. Both Kenneth Walker and Rashad Penny having hamstring injuries in camp, which it really makes me nervous. I know a lot of the time, like, you know, it could be something minor and they just kind of keep them out just to make absolutely certain that nothing gets aggravated. But whenever you have these guys in camps this early on that are having these hamstring injuries and that sort of thing, it seems like it just kind of lingers throughout the season. You have DK Metcalf, who may or may not get a deal elsewhere, depending on where the money's coming from. Geno Smith is ahead of Drew Lock, and the latter of whom Pete Carroll said would be the first quarterback if he were in the 2022 draft class. And I mean, I guess that's cool, but everyone said the 2022 draft class isn't really that good. So I really don't know if that's a good thing that Geno's ahead of him, but what are your thoughts on the murky situation in Seattle?
It's very interesting, especially now just looking back. I mean, it was interesting at the time too, but I just don't really know. I'd love to know what the motivation was behind moving Russell Wilson. If he was very unhappy, what was the deal there? Because Russell Wilson's don't come around every single day. And regardless of the draft capital that they got for him and you know, the return on investment, the odds are just so low that you're going to be able to build back in the near future to anywhere close to the kind of chance he gives you to be a playoff and potentially championship winning team. So their over under for the season is set at 5.5, which is, I think, from when I looked, was the only team that's lower than that is the Texans, which I actually kind of like the over. That might be a topic for a different day, because Davis Mills isn't as bad as people think. I know I really like to give him shit for his like horrendously, like historically bad day last season, but that's neither here nor there. My point, I'll get back to the Seahawks here. I don't really know what their plan is. I mean, obviously these injuries aren't something they can control, but Pete Carroll's 70 years old and they trade away their franchise quarterback and seemingly are in the middle of a rebuild. Like, everybody knows that they're going to be at the top of next year's draft looking at CJ Stroud or one of the other, you know, we're talking about maybe four or five quarterbacks going in the first round next year. So I guess it's a long-winded way of saying I really don't know what their plan is, but it could be really, really bad at the end of the day. I think you're probably looking at the Seahawks, potentially the Panthers and the Texans battling for who's worst in the NFL. Like, I know teams in the NFL don't really tank, but they also can put themselves in situations where it's really hard to win. And it seems like that's what Seattle's done to themselves, especially if they get rid of DK Metcalf.
Yeah. That's one thing where I had heard, I guess, once Russell Wilson got shipped out, they were like, oh, well, you know, one of these receivers has to go. Is it DK? Is it Tyler Lockett? Which, kind of like you mentioned, of that Tyler Lockett to Russell Wilson connection, not to say that Lockett would have gone to Denver necessarily, but it seemed like it would have made sense. I mean, with Lockett being a bit older, do we really think he's going to establish as good of a connection with another quarterback as they try to get one? Because it probably wouldn't have been Geno or Drew Lock. But yeah, that's the one big thing that if they think they're retooling and they're not rebuilding, this is going to be an absolute catastrophe. And it could just be that the ownership and everything is telling Pete Carroll, we're just retooling. They're going to do terribly this year. They will fire Pete Carroll, and then the new coach coming in will have this, I'm trying to remember their draft picks, their pick of the litter in terms of a quarterback that they can get and hopefully be able to kind of rebuild from there. Cause I know they were very fortunate with, it's not like Russell Wilson was like the first one off the board. He obviously usurped. Oh God, who was it from the Packers? The guy that they signed him to a fat contract. Yes. So he had his lovely 5-touchdown day. And then he got signed, and then Russell Wilson comes in and just takes over a quarterback. So a very unusual situation there, but Basically just chalk it up to a lost season. And yeah, I mean, certainly bottom three. And sadly, as a Panthers fan, I hope they're better than the Seahawks. But look, comparing the rosters, I sincerely have no idea. But I think that about does it for Jews News.
Jews News.
So now we talk the bell of the ball, best ball. And this is the high-octane world of fantasy football, which I'm relatively new to. I actually am just in the midst of my first couple drafts. I just finished my first complete slow draft in the FC Eliminator, which is done for charity and kind of ties content creators with people, just fantasy football fans. But I thoroughly enjoy it. The slow draft is something I guess I'm a bit used to, obviously, with what we've done in the League of Extraordinary Degenerates as we go over a couple of days there. But Tyler, how did you first hear about best ball and what has your experience been thus far?
Yeah, so the first time I heard about it, I believe it was the Fantasy Pros podcast 3 or 4 years ago. And originally, I didn't understand it. I thought it was something where you were restructuring your league and it was just to try to become more of like a pedestrian league, which I guess you could use it in that way. But as it started to get mentioned more, I just got a little bit more interesting. And then I think it was about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, that one of the other podcasts I listened to said that basically mock drafting was dead and that, you know, best ball drafts were the way to go. So I did a little bit of poking around and ended up getting Yahoo launched their best ball version. And I think deposited somewhere in the neighborhood of about $10 of on-site credits to everybody just to try to get people interested and everything. And so I've just mostly done $1 and $5 drafts for the last couple of years. And I usually enter into about anywhere to 10 to 15 of them. Just periodically, I'll do maybe one a week starting in mid-May leading up to August. Cause it's a really, for me, it's a really good way to get a feel for, like I said, it's a better version of a mock draft. I know there's some variance because people view players differently. Things like stacking are a lot more important in something like best ball to try to get larger outcomes and spike weeks. But in general, it's much better than sitting in a mock draft lobby on ESPN or Yahoo. And then some troll numbnuts takes a kicker at the 101 and then the whole draft and people take the first 3 or 4 rounds and they just boot. Like, you put $1, even $1 or $5 behind anything and people will pay a little bit more attention to it because they want to win money. So that's what I typically use it for. And I think, you know, I'm not hardcore about it. I think over the past couple of years, I've just basically been net zero in that I win enough to keep my account going. And then the next year I'd go back in, I don't have to put any new money in. I just do it all over.
That's awesome. I mean, it certainly makes sense in terms of, like you're saying, if you're doing it on a like a week to week basis or something like that, you kind of see the change in ADPs. And I mean, I think even if you didn't do that, but if you just kind of followed the news, you could have an idea of, oh, I wonder what this does to this player's value based on injuries and coach speak and that sort of thing. But to actually physically see it in front of you. And like you were saying, there's some players that maybe have a different kind of look to them, which we'll talk about here in a second. That's an interesting thing that to kind of carry into redraft once we, of course, have the battle for the stick among other leagues I'm sure we're in. So definitely a good thing to have. And one thing, like you were talking about, what would be a player that maybe you think highlights the difference in value or like ADP in best ball drafts versus redraft? Whether it be a guy that's a boom bust guy or something like that?
Yeah, a good example I thought, and I know we only have 1 year of data on this player, but Kadarius Toney came to mind because, I think of a gadget type player like that. Debo Samuel might be an example as well. He's a little bit of a tier above, not a little bit, he is very much a tier above, but someone that you know is going to have spike weeks. But it's going to be hard on a week-to-week basis from a redraft perspective to figure out where they're coming. Another player, and he's not on a team right now, someone like Will Fuller, someone who can pop for, you know, he can take 3 catches for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns, but then the next week he's going to completely disappear. So it's someone who gets manufactured touches. Kadarius Toney, you know, can take any ball to the house. So someone who's going to get the ball in their hands and potentially make game-changing type plays for you, because there's, you can make this argument it's true for redraft leagues or even dynasty to an extent, but there's really no incentive to come in fifth or in, you know, fifth through whatever. I mean, you're trying to win this thing. So best ball really, I think, just puts a little bit more of an emphasis on taking shots on someone who can really hit, as opposed to taking, like, you know, Jamison Crowder or Tyler Boyd, guys that you might feel a little bit safer rolling out there on a week-to-week basis in redraft, because they're probably going to get you five catches for 50 yards at least and throw you up a 10 spot in PPR. But so you'd rather swing for the fences and go for maybe even a little bit more of an unknown quantity, because if he does hit, then you're going to be way ahead of the game.
Yeah. Well, I think it's all good to kind of digest, and just to kind of leave it here with best ball, maybe you want to lock in that we partake in a best ball draft, and maybe we can recap that on a future episode.
I thought of The Office when Pam says, what you say when Dwight asks you if you want to be involved like in an alliance or something? Absolutely, I do.
Yeah. Well, you took the note from Jim very well, as did Pam, of course. Yeah, that'll be good. And jumping over to, as you are, my fearless commissioner in so many leagues at this point, just to kind of tie this all in, and I know I owe you commissions themselves for what I put you through, but what would you say is a power that you would want to either have that you don't currently have, say if it's the League of Extraordinary Degenerates, to relinquish that you no longer want to have to deal with, or that you'd rather delegate to specifically have, like, know that someone else is kind of handling it?
So do you want one for all three, or just pick one?
If you have one for all three, more than happy. If there's maybe one that sticked out the most to you, then one at all overall is okay.
I know. So the one I wrote down to relinquish or delegate for sure was very easy for me. It's collecting money. And I know it sounds like a really easy thing to do. I don't know if it's just the way my personality works or whatever, but inevitably a handful of people are going to forget to pay. And I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Everyone's extremely busy. I understand that. But it's also been really, it's never been easier to pay somebody than it is in today's world either, with Venmo, Zelle, Cash App, whatever. Side note, our good friend Justin Fabiano, manager of Endzone Eaton Season in our league, is starting up a dynasty league for some of the teachers in the school that he works in. Nice. And he asked me to send him, he asked me if we had any sort of league charter or document. So I sent him the league thing, and on there is my personal address, because I actually said on there that I would accept snail mail. Believe it or not, there's a gentleman in Battle for the Stick, shout out Will Henry, who sends me $25 in cash via mail every single year for the league. And
oh my God.
he was really tickled by that. So he's going to start sending me either a check or cash for his league dues for the League of Extraordinary Degenerates. But to get back to my point, it's just not fun. And I hate feeling like I have to hound people for it, but it's a necessary part of the league, obviously. You know, we do this also for fun, but also for the financial incentive, and we want to feel like we're competing for something. So that would be the duty that I would relinquish. The power I'd want to have, and, you know, I guess you could just, every commissioner would want this, but I just wish I was enough of a jerk, or that people would just listen to whatever rule changes I wanted to have. I want everybody to be happy and quit the league. And it's not like I would do anything radical, but, you know, like, for instance, we had an issue with tanking a couple years ago. I really wanted to ram through the max points for as our, or like the possible max points, basically, essentially a version of a power rating to determine our draft order. That got shot down. I still am a little bit bitter about that, because I don't think that there's really any reason for that not to be the case. But there are some people that I guess think that tanking is a valid strategy, and you know, they pay their money just like everybody else. So if I can't get a super majority, that's always been my rule. If I can't get like at least 70% of people to go on board with the rule, I'm not going to change it. So I might take away kickers and defenses, which some people would probably say is a little too radical. I know Jacob Ridgeway is very passionate about his kickers. So, I guess it's probably for everyone's better, for their peace of mind that I don't have that power, but if I did, I've also wanted to make our redraft league a super flex, and that keeps getting shot down just because we have super flex and dynasty, and it's an added layer of fun. I think super flex and redraft would be awesome. I think it just shakes up how you want to do roster construction so much. You know, I mean, obviously starting two quarterbacks is kind of like the optimal strategy most of the time, but if you want to go light at quarterback, just load up elsewhere and run the risk, and then you can. So it just increases paths to winning, which to me is fun. But yeah, so I guess selfishly, I just want to cram down whatever policies I could, and everybody just had to listen to me and be okay with it. But we're not bound to our leagues. You know, people could leave, so I try to keep the peace and keep everyone in general as happy as I can.
Well, I mean, I thought this was America. I thought we get to vote on this thing. No, I would actually say, and I don't know if you're going to attempt to do anything before the redraft league starts up again, but you know what? If I have to lose my kickers in defense to maybe also get super flex, I would allow that. That'd be awesome. I think super flex, because always adjusting in redraft back to like, oh, someone like a Tua or something like that could be just on the waiver. So like when you have your bye week, if you only get one quarterback, you are guaranteed to have 3 to 5 quarterbacks that are one starting and two not named Geno Smith, basically, that you can actually plug in and probably pretty easily win that week and not be a detriment to your team. But yeah, having something like that, obviously we've experienced how that changes the dynamic in Dynasty. But in redraft, you're not beholden to like, all right, well, I got to make sure that I can get maybe an older guy now, like a Russell Wilson, but I got to make sure I get somebody that's a bit younger. Cause if I'm stuck with a Russell Wilson and a Tom Brady, if that was the case, I'm screwed for the years going forward. But if it's redraft and it's super flex, it really adds a nice layer to be like, I'm going to pick two guys. I don't care their age, but I mean, if they're going to be studs now, I can stack them and we're good to go. So that's a very nice thing there. But, and final commissioner question. So, comparing commissioning of redraft to dynasty, what would you say are kind of the notable differences, whether it be like the stresses, the burdens that you carry of one versus the other one?
I would say, kind of going back to what we were talking about before, I have more fun commissioning, I think, the dynasty league, and I think it all comes down to the level of investment. And I know that at times we like to pull out our violin and whine a little bit about some of the guys in our league who don't participate maybe as much as we'd like. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, knock on wood, we're now going into our fourth season and we're still with all original ownership, and we get sporadic responses from everybody over email, but every now and then I get a full season will never go by where I don't hear from at least everybody in the league at least once. And and redraft, I think, just because, you know, it's just that mentality. It's just something that you do, you know, once a fall, and once you're out of it, you know, out of the playoff contention, you just kind of stop setting your lineup and all this stuff. And it's just the added element of the rookie draft and trading all year. I think that would be the biggest difference, is just, it's more fun keeping up with the dynasty league because of that level of investment.
Yeah, I can certainly agree with, well, in the inaugural 2018 draft for the League of Extraordinary Degenerates, I can still attest to the fact that I did not have a very firm grasp on the implication of dynasty in terms of age, and also the implication of Superflex being that I thought that Matt Stafford, Joe Flacco, and Josh Rosen would be fine. It didn't work out too well. But that's a very, a very fair way to look at it. And certainly I would say in our league, like you were saying, there is maybe a portion of the league that is, I mean, invested. It doesn't matter if it's off season or in season, but I guess that's probably reflective of, I would say, most leagues where it's tough to find, tough to get a full dynasty league of 10 to 12 people that are as on it as the other person. So I guess it kind of adds to a bit of parity that, especially if you have someone who's not as invested, so they don't make the moves and they don't make the knee-jerk trades, but then they end up keeping those players and they could very well make the playoffs, which makes everybody else furious that takes all the time to make the trades and be active. But that's what makes it fun. But Tyler, I appreciate you coming on. And as always, guest gets the last word. And I'd love to hear what you got on tap today.
So I don't have a ton for you, but I did hear this quote this week, and it's very poignant given the tumultuous financial state that we're currently finding our country in with the stock market, that it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. So I hadn't heard that. It's very corny, but I wanted to share it because it's a little bit of a, I guess, a ray of sunshine given all the crap that's going on right now with like 495 of the 500 S&P companies being in the red yesterday. So not a lot of good times on that front, but wanted to also mention that we need to get you and the fam down here soon. Construction on the house is almost done. So we have the screened-in porch going up and the new patio. We're going to have the outdoor TV. We're going to be really geared up for this fall. So we got to get you guys down here and have Finn and Emma see each other again. And I guess you guys still haven't been to the house down here, have you? You have.
But I have. I went one, yeah.
But Marley hasn't. So we got to get you down here soon.
Well, I'm gonna give that a hell yeah. And that's a great idea. And I also love that the screening porch will, I imagine it will be a lavish TV ready to broadcast any bit of college or professional football that you can desire.
Yeah, it's going to be, I'm getting very excited about it now that we're this close. So we're going to do it all the way and probably be out there as long as it's not freaking like, you know, 105 degrees, like it's been the last couple of days in Charlotte. So,
oh yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine that. I know the humidity in Southwest Virginia, of course, is not great, but I can imagine the further south you go, I'm sure it does not get much better.
No, it's oppressive.
Well, Tyler, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll be catching up soon, brother.
Thanks as always. Look forward to next time already.
Cheers.
Cheers.